Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, a podcast that aims to address divorce, separation and co-parenting here in the UK, countering the often sensationalist way it's portrayed in the media, challenging the status quo and driving for reform. On each episode, I'm joined by experts to discuss divorce and separation and co-parenting from different angles and to give their opinions and to debate them. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor and divorce coach, co-founder of Amicable and host of the Divorce Podcast. In this episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Zeyma Dejani. Zeyma is a proud mum of two girls, Dania and Yasmina, who are from two different marriages in two different countries. Zeyma's first marriage in Jordan was a very difficult one. After her first divorce, she reinvented herself and decided to go to law school. Since qualifying, Zeyma has been working as a commercial solicitor in London for over 15 years and is also an accredited breakup and divorce coach practitioner. Zeyma's book, From Breakup to Empowerment, is a guidebook on divorce to provide helpful tips for anyone embarking on a divorce in England or America. The book tackles the various steps which may ease the divorce process, and it covers topics such as finance, emotional issues, child custody and maintenance, as well as how to start a new life post-divorce. Welcome, Zeyma.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the introduction.
You've had such a varied career that's got you to where you are now and to the writing of the book. Tell me a little bit about what's your experiences and what's led you to writing this book and to where you are now.
Okay, great question. Thanks for that. So the reason why I wrote the book is actually because I felt that I was destined to write it. My two divorces were really traumatic, but at the same time, they were really, they shaped who I am. And they helped shape my career as well, because from my first divorce, I invented myself and I went into law school. So I completely changed, you know, my whole identity. And then for my second divorce, I started learning more about property investment and as well as divorce coaching. So again, I reinvented myself, but I still maintain my legal background. So I'm wearing so many different hats at the same time. But the reason why I wrote the book is that I've learned so many lessons from my first and my second divorce. And actually, my second divorce, I managed to apply the lessons that I learned from my first divorce, which made it a much simpler, faster, and cheaper way to get a divorce. And I wanted to share these lessons with others. And I want to share the lessons that my other friends who went through divorce as well in this book.
That's so interesting, because lots of people saying, I know I feel it myself, that when you buy a divorce for the first time, effectively you're a naive purchaser, aren't you? You've got no experience. You don't know what to expect. You've got nothing to benchmark it against. But when you have to do it again, it's completely different, isn't it? That you're able to actually, like you say, apply some of those lessons. Tell me a bit about those lessons. What did you learn after the first divorce that you then were able to put into practice the second time round?
I learned lots of lessons, but the main one I would say is that it's much better to try to avoid going to court. My first divorce was very acrimonious, and it actually took two years of battling it out in the court. And at the time I had a one-year-old baby. So Daniel was 1 year old at the time. So being a single mom, unemployed, I wasn't working at the time, and having to defend myself to get the divorce, because at the time my ex-husband didn't want to give me a divorce, so it was trying to, you know, get that over the line, and he was based in a different country as well, so that even complicated things more so. So there was, you know, jurisdiction issues, and there were so many complications. I'm not gonna bore the audience with that, but the main lesson was that I knew that, you know, when you start going to court, you lose control of your case, because a lot of it depends on what the judge on the day decides, how he feels or how she feels. A lot of the facts, you know, get thrown out the window. So, you know, if you were abused or there's any domestic violence, that really doesn't matter in terms of, you know, the outcome, which really, it really opened my eyes to how unjust the whole legal system is when it comes to divorce.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because I think when you've never done it before, I think there's this perception that the court will somehow be a place of truth and justice, and you will get absolutely what, you know, you deserve, and it will be the place for this to happen. And yet when I talk, from my own experience and talking to you and to so many other people who've been, you know, forced down that court route, you realize, as you say, that's just not the case. It's not a place where the truth will out and everything gets sorted out according to, you know, the letter of the law and the law of the land. It is still such a subjective process. And as you say, one you have no control over.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah.
And also, it's a gamble, because, you know, you could have a great outcome or you could have a horrible one. And it depends on so many different factors. So it's not only on whether or not you have a good legal team, but also on whether or not, you know, the judge on the day will be reasonable and will not forget, you know, important facts, and will also, you know, weigh the pros and cons of each party's arguments, you know, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, which party's position is more reasonable or more believable. Because, you know, when you go into divorce, it's like a battle. So it's, you know, one person is fighting against the other one. So it's, you know, it's never a pleasant, you know, field to be working on or to be of. So it's a horrible environment to be in.
It sounds like it was incredibly stressful, and you say you learned, you know, second time round to avoid court at all costs. So what happened second time round then? What were you able to implement differently?
So the second time round, I actually avoided going to a lawyer at all. So my second divorce was actually in Los Angeles, California. I knew nothing about the American law because I qualified as a UK solicitor. So, you know, I had to really get up to speed to understand how to get a divorce without going through lawyers. And
no mean feat in the States.
No, exactly. And I actually researched a lot on how to do that. And I found a mediator in LA who was an ex-judge, and she specialized in family law. So I approached her and I said, listen, you know, I'd love to have you mediate our divorce. And she, you know, she was very open-minded and she understood where it came from. And she's like, yeah, sure. You know, all you have to do is X, Y, Z. She gave me the outline of the, you know, the main steps that we have to go through. I managed to convince my then husband that it's much better for us to go down the mediation route rather than going to court.
Well, that's interesting. Tell me about that, because I think that's a problem lots of people share, isn't it? Where you feel convinced you want to do a mediated or negotiated approach, but then you've got to convince your partner. So just expand a little bit on that. How did you persuade your partner? Who had he been divorced before?
He had, actually, yes.
But he had. So he had some experience too. So I guess that was riding on your side. But what did you say to convince him then?
It was mainly a monetary point that I made across. So, because he was a CFO. So for him, money is a big deal. He appreciates, you know, everything to do with money. So I said, listen, instead of us wasting thousands and thousands of dollars on this divorce, and obviously a lot of time as well, because in America, it usually takes at least 2 years, if not more. Why don't we go down the mediation route? And that way, you know, number one, we're much cheaper and much faster, and there's no need to drag things on. And actually, I gave him a few examples of other friends of mine who went through divorce in LA, and the fees that they paid were, you know, ranging between $50,000 to $100,000. And I said, you know, do you want to be paying this much? You know, obviously we'll be splitting everything half, 50-50 between us. But still, it's a fortune when you think about that. And at the end of the day, you don't know what the judge will decide. You know, even, you know, when you go through mediation, you control, you know, what the main aspects of the settlement are. But when you leave it in the judge's hands, you know, you could lose much more than what you would have expected, you know, to gain had you had, you know, an amicable settlement with your partner. So it just made more sense to me. And when I explained it to him that way, he actually, you know, he took it on board and he agreed that, yes, let's do it that way.
So the secret to this was really finding out what his kind of primary motivator was, in this case, saving money, understandably, and then highlighting then the benefits and the money you could save by doing this by agreement. And as you say, the control that you have too.
Yeah, I mean, I think the control was probably the most powerful one, because, you know, we heard horror stories where judges would give, you know, full custody to one partner, to one party, and nothing to the other party. And he was afraid that, you know, this would happen, because, you know, he had this idea that most judges would side with the mom's, you know, mom side, and you know, he would probably get very little rights in terms of our daughter. I mean, our daughter at the time was 8 years old, so, you know, this was his main motivation, that he wanted to make sure that he gets a fair, you know, settlement, you know, through the mediation.
Yeah, I understand. So you had this terrible court battle for your first divorce. You managed to talk your husband around into doing it differently the second time round. So you divorce amicably and you have a mediated agreement. What happens next then to get you to this point?
I mean, I was very lucky that I'm very fortunate that my second ex-husband has, you know, he's been very reasonable. And my main condition of our settlement agreement is that I move back to London with our daughter, because I couldn't practice law in America. You know, I did try, but because I did the conversion course instead of going to the 3-year legal degree, I could not convert my degree in America. I would have to go back to doing the whole legal course again, which is another 4 years of university. And I said, there's no way I can do that, you know, mentally or financially or even emotionally. You know, I didn't have any, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to, you know, keep earning money. And my parents were, you know, my parents are living in London, and it just made more sense, you know. I mean, I grew up in London as well, so he agreed to that. And that was my main condition, you know, that let me and Yasmina move back to London. I will be able to earn my own income, and I'll provide her with the living, similar living standard that we had in LA. And for me, that was the main, you know, the main bargaining point that he had to agree to, because otherwise, you know, the whole divorce settlement would not make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, are you still, you're still practicing as a lawyer then?
I am, yes.
So then how do you get to the point where you become a divorce coach effectively? Because that's what you do now, isn't it? You've written a book, you're a divorce coach, you help other people navigate their own divorces. So you've gone from being, not wanting to do family law, being a commercial lawyer, back in London with your daughter. What then got you to divorce coaching?
When I wrote the book, I found it really therapeutic, because obviously it opened up a lot of my old wounds, and opened up, you know, all the different stages that I went through, from, you know, my first marriage, until, you know, where I am today. And it actually made me realize that I've been through so much, you know, I've been through so much ups and downs. Obviously, it's not all negatives. There's a lot of positives in it. And I wanted to bring this out in the book. I wanted to share the message, especially with other professional women, that, you know, getting a divorce is not the end of the world. Sometimes, you know, if you find yourself you're in an unhappy marriage, divorce may be the solution. You know, I know there's a lot of stigma sometimes regarding getting a divorce or even thinking of getting a divorce, because, and I was one of them, you know, thinking, oh, you know, how can I break up the family? How can I do this to my child? You know, especially when you're moving to a different country, and I've done that twice with both of my daughters. You know, how can I, you know, I felt guilty of, you know, moving my daughter from, you know, from the country that they, where their father lives, to back to London. But in hindsight, it was the best decision at both times, because I had to do what was good for me and what was right for both of us, for me and my daughters, because at the end of the day, if I cannot earn a living, and if I cannot maintain the same or similar lifestyle that we were used to, I will not be a nurturing and happy mom, you know. And if I don't feel fulfilled, and if I don't feel like I'm doing all I'm able to achieve and do, I will always feel, you know, something's missing. And my message is, like, you know, no matter where you are in the world, you know, not only in London or in America, wherever you are, what matters is that you should know instinctively whether or not you're in a happy relationship. Because if you're not happy, you know, for whatever reason, you need to do something about that. And everyone has a choice. You know, no one is forced to stay in the same situation or the same position. You know, everyone has a choice, no matter what anyone may say. You know, no one is forced to stay in an unhappy relationship. I know there's a lot of instances, especially in third world countries, where it's very difficult for the mother to leave her marriage. Sometimes even life threatening when they do that. And this is something I would love to do and love to help. I'd love to help such women to break free from these toxic marriages and relationships safely. Well,
even in our very developed world, there's a lot of fear around going it alone, a lot of fear about the economic consequences, particularly if you've been the partner who stayed at home to raise children, you've got off that career ladder. It can be very frightening then to think about how you're going to manage without the support of your partner financially, if you're the one that's taken the homemaking role. But it doesn't sound like that was your situation. It sounds like you had always worked. Is that right?
I had always worked, except when I was in LA. I couldn't work. Actually, in America, I was working part-time.
So you had to face that same sort of hurdle, that same fear of coming to a new country and starting, a job from scratch and starting again with a child.
Yes. I mean, in my second marriage, we had agreed that I would actually give up my career. Because I knew from the start that I cannot practice it in America. So the idea was, I'll move to New York. We got married in New York. So I'll move to New York and I'll be a full-time mom. Because at the time, my first daughter was 12 years old. And I decided that it was time for me, to spend valuable time with her. Because up to that point, I was a full-time career woman and I hardly had time to spend with her. And I thought this was my chance to make up all the lost time, for her. With her, things didn't go to plan because she stayed 1 year with us and she wasn't so happy with living in New York. She missed her friends. She missed my parents. My parents were like her parents really because she was raised by them. When I went to law school, they took care of her. So she missed all of that and she couldn't acclimatize with the American culture. So she decided to go back to London after the first academic year was over. So. Obviously, I was heartbroken at the time because I thought, this new beginning in New York, I'll be, looking after her full time and my chance to make up all the lost time that I spent growing my career and growing my legal work. But I had to have make a choice at that time. Do I leave my husband? And at that time, my second daughter was a year old because I got pregnant in my honeymoon. So it was a surprise baby. We weren't expecting that to happen. But at the time when Daniel left New York, Yasmina was a year old and I was left with the choice, okay, do I move back to London with, Daniel and Yasmina? Or do I, stick it out because it's my new life.
Your new life, yeah, absolutely.
Your new life.
So when did you decide to write a book about your divorce experience then and hand that down?
Actually, that's a really good question. I was helping a lot of women, giving them advice on divorce when I moved back to London. I was part of, and I still am part of a charity called Gingerbread Group. And a lot of them had really basic legal questions, even though I'm not a family lawyer, but I know the basics of, what to file and how to file and the legal jargon that a lot of them don't understand, what does this mean or what does that? And some of them kept saying, you should write a book because you have so much knowledge, you should write a book. And that sentence kept repeating itself from so many different people. And I thought, I've always wanted to write a book and maybe this is my chance. This is my calling, to write a book, share all the lessons that I've learned, try to empower women who may be thinking of getting a divorce or who are going through a breakup, sharing with them all my lessons and my struggles. But at the same time, sharing the message that going through a divorce is not the end of the world. You can be empowered through a divorce and also after the divorce. I mentioned lots of different strategies in my book on how to do that.
Who would you say your book is aimed at then, if you had to kind of sum that up, Zaima?
I would say my book is aimed at any professional woman who is thinking of getting a divorce but has no clue where to start or is worried about getting a divorce because of the stigma or of the unknowns or of the possible repercussions that she may face after divorce, like thinking, oh, I'm going to be lonely. I'm going to be, no one's ever going to marry me again. How am I going to cope as a single mom? How are my kids? How will they cope? And all of these questions actually are, you know, they all have solutions. I don't know what the statistic is, but divorce has become so many couples end up in divorce and
it's becoming, so prevalent. Yes.
You know, it's becoming more and more common these days, you know, like when someone says, oh, my parents are divorced, it's not a shock anymore. When I got divorced back in the 1990s, actually, I was the first person in my whole family to get divorced. At the time, it was a huge, you know, shock to everyone. Like, what? No, divorce? How can she get divorced? And but now it's becoming, oh, it's, you know, yeah, another couple getting divorced, no big deal. And every divorce happens for a reason. You know, you don't decide to get divorced just for the hell of it. You know, there has to be really strong undermining reasons for someone to want to leave this relationship, especially when there's kids involved. And I definitely didn't take either divorce as lightly. You know, I mean, it took me a long time to decide that this is the best solution for me and for everyone involved in the relationship. So,
and you said you learned between that first and second divorce, you learned a lot of lessons. Do you feel you learned something different writing the book? And if so, what do you think you learned having written and reflected on the divorce process?
I think the biggest thing that I've learned from writing the book is that we all evolve through time, you know, so nothing stays static. And it's always good to see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's always good to see, you know, the positives instead of just the negatives. And when you're actually in a divorce or you're actually in a breakup, you tend to forget about that. You tend to just focus on, you know, the trauma of it and all the problems that you're facing, but you don't think of, okay, well, this is temporary, you know, the divorce process is a temporary stage that I'm going through, but I should focus more on my life after the divorce. You know, what can I do after the divorce? How can I recreate my life? How can I design it the way I want to have, and something that will make me, you know, proud of who I am and bring me joy. So yeah, these are the things that I reflected on while writing the book.
At the end of this process, so having researched and written this book, you've obviously looked at lots of different processes and different ways of divorcing. And what are your sort of top tips then? What do you think are the key things if someone is on the brink of a divorce now? What would you want to say to them so they could benefit from your, you know, your personal experience, but also your research and the book that you've written?
Another great question. Thanks for that. Lots of tips. So number one tip is take your time. Don't rush into anything. Don't rush into the decision to leave. And if you have the means to seek some counseling. In my first divorce, I didn't have any counseling, but in my second divorce, I had lots of counseling, and that really did help me both before I got the divorce and afterwards. And actually, the counseling helped me get into the divorce coaching business, because that's how I, you know, I learned more about that side of divorce. So it never occurred to me that there's anything called divorce coaching, you know. And another tip is that you need to have all your financial information ready before you even start the divorce process. That was a huge lesson that I learned from my first one, because I had nothing, you know, when I left my marital home. Literally, I left with my daughter and her diapers and my passports. So I learned huge lessons from that. You know, you have to be prepared. Getting a divorce is like going, it's like you're starting a mission, you know, so you want to be prepared for this mission. And things that you need to prepare are things like, you know, what kind of assets do you own? Personally and jointly, ideally, if you have statements to prove that, what bank accounts do you have and how much are in each bank account, your expenses, your monthly expenses as a family, you need to show and to prove like what kind of lifestyle you're leading while you were married, especially if you have children, because you need to prove, you know, what kind of maintenance, child maintenance you need to get from your, you know, ex-husband. Especially if you're a stay-at-home mom, because if you're not earning any money and you get divorced, and it will take you time to, you know, to find a career or to even get a job. You need to obviously apply for spousal maintenance or alimony. In America, it's called alimony. And obviously child maintenance. And you need the figures to prove what you can ask for. And without having this information, you know, it would make it very difficult for you and for your legal team, if you're using lawyers or your mediator, to knuckle down and to have the financial settlement agreed, you know, because I think this is the longest part of the divorce process, is actually getting the financial settlement.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. The actual divorce bit's quite straightforward, isn't it, on lots of levels. Emotionally not, but the actual paperwork is, not difficult. But you're right, the complicated bit is agreeing what's reasonable and what you need, as you say.
Another tip is, when it comes to the children, obviously depending on what age they are, it's best to have a united front, you and your partner, when you actually break the news to them. That's the best way, in my opinion. You know, it's heartbreaking as it is, but if both parents, you know, share the news together, you know, something like, you know, mommy and daddy are, you know, are no longer going to be living together, but that doesn't mean that, you know, they love you any less. You know, we love you just as much, if not more, and you'll always be precious to us. And we'll find some kind of arrangements that will make everyone comfortable and happy. And this has nothing to do with you. Because a lot of times the children may think, oh, you know, what have I done wrong to, you know, to cause this, to cause my parents to break up? And actually, my second daughter had this exact feeling. She thought it was her, you know, she thought it was her fault that we're getting divorced, you know. And obviously that was very heartbreaking to hear, but, you know, you need to come down to their level and explain to them that obviously you are getting divorced, but this has nothing to do with them. And they may have to live in, you know, two separate households. But try to bring the fun in it. Like, you know, you're going to have two different beds, two different bedrooms, you know, two sets of clothes, whatever. But try to make it lighthearted as possible. And another tip is, if you can afford it, your children may need counseling as well. So not only the parents, but also the children. My daughter certainly had counseling during and after the divorce.
And you think it was good for her to be able to speak to somebody who wasn't her parent then, and to really be able to say how she felt without worrying about the impact of saying that on either of you?
I believe so. I mean, we had a hard time finding one that actually she felt comfortable with. So we had to, you know, we went through at least three different therapists before she said, okay, I'm happy with this one. And it's a try and error, because a lot of times it's the personality, you know. You need to make sure that whoever is counseling your child, that they're on the same wavelength. So my daughter is very creative and she's very artistic. So we found someone who has these tendencies that, you know, she actually gave her therapy through art. And that really helped her a lot.
It sounds like there are lots of, you know, wonderful tips and advice in the book. Where can people find the book, Azaima?
So the book is on Amazon. So you can Google it on Amazon. It's called From Breakup to Empowerment.
Brilliant. Thank you. And just briefly, tell me a little bit about, so you've transitioned into a divorce coach. You've qualified. You've got your practice certificate already. You're all ready to go. What sort of help do you give people now? Tell us a little bit about the divorce coach role.
Yeah, so I've actually prepared a 5-step program, which is based on my book. So my book, actually, the subtitle is, you know, 5 Steps to Getting a Divorce Fast. So the 5 steps are, number one, the mindset. So I think the mindset is crucial in any area of your life, but especially when it comes to divorce. So I help my clients in reframing their mindset and making it clear why they want a divorce, you know, to make sure that they're not making a mistake. And also at the same time, they need to have a vision on how will their life look like once the divorce is finished, so that whatever happens from point A to point Z, they will keep that vision in their mind that, you know, it's a temporary phase, you know, it's not going to last forever, and it will keep them on track. Because obviously getting a divorce and the divorce process is very...
You can get lost in the detail, can't you? We say that in our process as well. Yeah. Always set goals, think about the future, have something to aim for. And then when you're in that really low moment, you can lift your head up and remember the goal. And sometimes it just makes some of those decisions that little bit easier, doesn't it?
Exactly.
If you've got a goal and a destination in mind. So,
exactly. Yeah. And there's a saying, you know, what you focus on grows. So if you focus on the positives, then that will grow on your, in your life. And if you focus on the negatives, then you'll also, you know, have more negatives in your life. So step number two is the financial side. So as we discussed before, you know, they need to make sure that they have all the financial information prepared and ready. And number three is the children's welfare. So we talk about, you know, how do you prepare your children psychologically and, you know, emotionally and also physically as well.
Practically, yeah.
You know, so there's different tools that I share with my clients on how to do that. The fourth stage is the legal side. I mean, that's, you know, that's the less sexy side of the whole program, you know, unfortunately, but it has to be covered.
Necessary, yeah.
It needs to be covered, yeah. My aim is to try to persuade my clients to avoid going to lawyers and to avoid going to court altogether, just as I convinced my second husband to do that. So it will benefit not only them, but benefit everyone in the family, especially the children, because by having an amicable divorce, that means that, you know, they will be spending less money on the whole process and obviously less time. And it just makes the whole process much more palatable.
Yeah. Divorce, well, I certainly concur with that.
Yeah. Divorce can become really ugly.
Yeah.
Very easily, even if you don't intend it to be.
Yeah. You know? Accidentally. Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Especially when the ego comes into play, you know, like.
Well, also when the fear hits as well, I think people can make very shaky decisions when they're frightened and they feel their backs are against the wall. So trying to create that environment where it's not a culture of fear, but it's a culture of exploration, joint exploration, that makes all the difference. It allows you to be your better self and it allows you to make better decisions. And that's
exactly.
Ultimately what this comes down to, isn't it?
Exactly.
Decision making.
Exactly. And the last stage is, you know, what creating their life after the divorce. So it links to the first stage, but it's more like, you know, a conclusion of the program. And also, a lot of clients may need hand-holding once a divorce is done, right? Because it's not, you don't just snap out of it automatically,
yeah.
Oh, I'm divorced. You know, some people go into depression, some people have divorce parties. You know, different people react differently to getting the divorce absolute in your hands, so they may need some coaching in the aftermath.
Well, it sounds like a really useful process. How can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more or they want to sign up to your service?
I'm actually building my website, so it hasn't been finished yet, but they can reach me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook and also I'm on LinkedIn. And I can also share my email address. I don't know if I can do that, if you can share the link, you know, in your podcast.
We'll find a way of sharing the link, don't worry, or people can get in touch with us and we'll pass it on. But look, it's been fascinating, Zaima, talking to you and hearing about your journey and your experience and what's led you to becoming a divorce coach. So thank you so much for your time. It's been a real pleasure listening
to that
detail.
Thank you so much for having me.
And the journey. It's my pleasure. That's all we've got time for today. So my thanks to Zaima. If you want to find out more, you can contact us and we'll pass on details to Zaima. But also you can find out more about the podcast by subscribing to @the_divorce_podcast. And you can find me on Twitter @Kate_Daly as well. Thanks very much for listening.